This week on Reality Check, we're interviewing Gordon Clay. He's our local advocate about teen suicide and really all the issues related to suicide. And Gordon, pleasure to have you back. Always good to see you, and you've always got such important things to say. Suicide being such an important thing here in this county, the way so many kids are affected.
Yes, it is, and I really appreciate you having me back. I think it is a topic that we're getting into that season, and a lot of stress and anxiety with people, and particularly right after the holidays, and actually coming in touch with the bills that they get from overspending on Black Friday and places like that, and our teens. They're continuing to increase their distress levels and their suicide attempt levels, and we've got to get in touch with that.
Well, I know this time of year, even if it's not getting the bills afterwards, but some people have just a lot of difficulty with Christmas. They're alone or they have bad associations with it. And it can be a difficult time for people. We're going into the dark season of the year. I'm really glad we're able to do it right now. We're hopefully, if somebody needs help, they might hear this. Or the other thing is, you're seeing relatives and friends that maybe haven't seen for a while, and if there's a change in their behavior, maybe you'll have some tools coming out of this talk that'll help you
cope with that.
You know, But let's start with where you mentioned just a minute ago about what are the local statistics this time around. I know we had some last time we talked, but that's been a while. What's the most recent?
Well, it continues to be records. The U.S. were at 47,000 suicides, and that's up like 8% from the year before. In Oregon, we're up at 855, which is considerably up from the year before. In Curry County, we're at the highest we've ever been. We have been at 14 deaths before, but never before that, and that was back during the housing crisis and all. And 14 doesn't sound like much, but it actually is the highest per capita in the state of Oregon for any county, and it's 30% higher than the next closest county. And the really difficult thing about this is that if we're anywhere close to, or if, say, Portland is anywhere close to our per capita, the number of people that are impacted by a suicide in Portland, even if they were equal in per capita suicides, is very small because they don't, all those suicides sort of disappear. Here, our 14 people, many of the people know at least one of the two men that died in August.
And these are adults and teenagers? And
this is
everybody.
Total suicide.
Okay.
I mean, and 10-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not in Curry County yet. But the 8, 9, and 10-year-olds nationally are increasing at a very high rate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because they have not learned the coping skills. Most teenagers, most people under 24, haven't learned the coping skills. So they get into one of these quick crises, and they don't have the skills to circumvent that. And what I had seen not too long ago was a statistic where the researchers went into the emergency department and they talked to people that had just attempted suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first questions they asked was, how long before you actually thought about the suicide did you attempt? 45% of the people said 10 minutes or less.
Wow.
So this isn't something they were thinking about. This isn't something that was built up over time. This is something like what happened to me is I had seen something happen, and it so disturbed me that if I had a gun, I wouldn't be here today.
Yeah.
Without that gun, I didn't have an immediate way, and I had a cool down period, and then I thought, okay, I'm going to call my doctor. But when I was in that 10-minute window, I don't think I would have made it.
I know when I was a kid, I tried twice very awkwardly because I didn't know how to do it. But it was, you know, like you say, a lack of coping skills of things that were going on then, if they were going on now in my life, I'd be like, okay, it's another day, you know. But at that point, well, for one thing, when you're a kid, you can't pick up your toys and go get your own condo. I mean, if you're in a bad situation, you don't have a lot of power over your situation. So that, I think, leads to a feeling of helplessness and hopelessness, too.
That does. And the other thing, particularly for boys, is that 82% of the boys who kill themselves, there's a gun in the household.
Yes.
And so they've got it available to them, and they know how to get it. And what I've been talking in this area about a lot this last Suicide Prevention Month mm-hmm. is, if you've got a gun, keep it locked up. Keep the bullets separate, and have a deal with another friend that has a gun to have a buddy program. If I'm feeling suicidal or I'm really on edge, I want you to keep my bullets.
Mm-hmm.
And I want them back, mm-hmm. regardless of my condition, when I ask for them.
Right.
But that's our deal.
Mm-hmm.
And just that little bit of time gives them a chance to come down and realize that the issue isn't that bad, and we can get through this.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to save our kids, and that's what's so dangerous about this area, is
yeah.
that they don't have their guns locked up.
And I know another story that I've heard is that people who jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge, the ones that survived, they said as soon as they left ground, they regretted it mm-hmm. all the way down, which
yep.
would have been really a drag, actually. Anyway, but thankfully they survived.
All 19 of them said the same thing.
Wow.
The minute that they left the platform,
mm-hmm.
they regretted it.
Now, I imagine that when we describe it being impulsive, that they may have been thinking about it off and on mm-hmm. before, but the actual impulse to do mm-hmm. it was very sudden and impulsive.
Right. Well, and I haven't seen research on that. I know one of the guys that did it is on, and he broke his spine and all kinds of things, and he's got a really interesting video on YouTube. So I don't know what the time period was. I know that every worker on the Golden Gate Bridge, the painters and the sanders and all that kind of stuff, every one of them have been well-trained in suicide prevention work.
Oh, wow.
So if they see something, and then they've got special forces out there, police,
mm-hmm.
during the particular times that they see there are people attempt suicide. And so they're all trained on how to deal with that, how to talk somebody down, what not to say, all of that kind of thing. So
right.
that is remarkable. And they've got a phone at both ends of the bridge
mm-hmm.
to suggest for people to call. But this is even beyond that, that they've really, and I think, the last I heard, that they were actually putting a net under it again.
That's what I thought, that
yeah.
they were, that was netted or yeah. fenced in some way.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I think is so important about your message is you tell people what to look for and what to say to someone that you suspect might be in trouble that way. And I'd love to talk about it now, and then maybe, if we're lucky and have the time, say it again towards the end of the mm-hmm. program, because that's the important tool, I think. When you have a friend or a family member that just seems like they're a little off, there's certain yeah. questions that are good to ask, right?
Yeah. The actually, in Curry County and in Del Norte County, I've got 163 locations where you can pick up a little card that says, "Are you okay?"
Mm-hmm.
Used to be a semicolon button.
Yes.
But what I found was this card is used in a crisis. And when we would give a semicolon card to somebody, it had the same information on the back, but we'd give the semicolon card, and people would say, "What's that mean?"
Mm-hmm.
And so it got people off of the communication of really talking about what's going on for them right now
yeah.
into the theory and the story behind the semicolon.
Yeah.
Now it immediately gets in and says what you say verbally, "Are you okay?"
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to say you're not okay, and then open up the conversation for a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And the important, really important thing is for us as individuals, we've got a lot of things that we're wanting to do in Curry County, and we'll talk about that shortly. Mm-hmm. But while that is getting established and while we start learning the things that we can do, we as individuals, next door neighbors, in your church group, in your colleagues at work, in your family, 80% of kids who commit suicide, their parents had no clue.
Yeah.
And they only found out about it from after it happened, but looking at their kid's cell phone and see how distressed the kids were. So even if we start learning what the warning signs are and what to look for, then we can circumvent the process of ending up trying to get somebody to an emergency room. And we don't have an emergency room that can handle a suicide case.
Well, if somebody comes in, what do?
They send them to Coos Bay.
Oh, good luck with that.
Yeah. Huh. Well, up to Bay Area Hospital. Hmm. And I know of a case that just happened recently that they were sent down to Sutter Coast, and Sutter Coast denied entry, and they had to bring them all up to a crisis team here in Curry County. And
wow.
What I want to do is I want to give a shout out to our crisis teams, because they are absolutely sure saving lives. That if we didn't have those skilled people and ready to get up and go deal with a call right now, we would have many more suicides in this
county.
How
does one get a hold of them if you have somebody who's in trouble or you're in trouble?
You call the county crisis line, and they automatically set up, because they've got it set up through Curry Community Health,
mm-hmm.
and you'll get a therapist there. I'm pretty sure 911 would go there, because 911 would come into Brookings and the Brookings police would call the crisis team.
They can patch you through, kind
right.
of thing.
And then the really valuable thing for teens is that 90% of teens will not call a suicide phone line or suicide helpline. They don't even talk on their cell phones, but they do text.
Mm-hmm.
And the number 741-741, if they text that number, and the average call is 15 to 45 minutes, crisis call, if they text that number, they'll get a very well-trained crisis counselor that I believe is better than talking to a psychiatrist, because they are up to date with the information on what's out there. All the data that goes in from your texts, every single one of your texts, goes into a computer that already has over 120 million previous texts. It gets analyzed.
So you're talking about if you were to text this number,
yeah.
then whatever you say in that text would go into the
system.
Goes
into the computer.
Okay.
It gets analyzed, and then it goes back to the screen of the counselor that is chosen and available for that call, and says, like 42% of the people that text this are cutters, and here's the next best question to ask.
Mm.
And that happens all the way through this 15 to 45 minute period.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the very interesting things, and one of the reasons I say this is better than talking to a psychiatrist or a social worker or a therapist, is that those people have a training in a certain way, and then they've got experience with previous calls that they've had, so there's a prejudice there on how to deal with it. With 120 million texts in 5-year period of time, this is up to the minute research.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is data that
right.
isn't available in New York or New England Journal of Medicine.
Right.
And one of the really interesting things is that your psychiatrist can't deal with emoticons. And what they have seen is when somebody uses an emoticon with a tear,
mm-hmm.
that person is in immediate crisis right now.
Wow.
And they've gotten that because in this 15 to 45 minute period, they've seen where the emoticon comes in, and they've seen what's transpired in that 15 to 45 minutes, and they've had that so much that they almost invariably end up calling 911. And so when that emoticon comes on, immediately they go to the at-risk questions.
Mm-hmm.
And they determine the status right now. And in so many of those cases, it's a contact with 911. So while the person's texting, you've got the ambulance coming. You've got the whole, you've got the crisis team coming to save that person's life. But the through the texting, you've got the crisis counselor communicating and seeing what's going on and keeping things going.
It's very interesting from the perspective that it seems to me that texting is the least intimate of all the different ways we could be talking to someone face-to-face, phone, email, text. Texting is the most arm's length. And that's what I imagine is true for a lot of people who are in crisis mode, especially males for some reason, that they don't want to talk about it in a certain way because it's like you're not supposed to talk about bad things, right? And so texting is the least vulnerable way to talk about it in a way.
Well, that is so true, and this is what we're going to have to live with.
Yeah.
Because recent research came out with millennials.
Mm-hmm.
75% of millennials would rather text somebody than have a face-to-face conversation.
Yeah.
And when you go to Gen Z, mm-hmm. which is the current, it's even more so. And I know, I remember back when we got answering machines on our phones
mm-hmm.
at home.
Yeah.
And I felt so relieved at times because I could call somebody that I didn't really want to talk to, but I needed to give a message to, and I wouldn't have to connect up with them directly.
Right.
And I knew when they were at work, and they didn't. This is before cell phones, of course, and so their phone at home mm-hmm. was answering, and I could leave the message, and that was a relief. Well, that's gotten even greater now, and I know some of the therapists are working with this issue because they have a very difficult time talking with their clients, the young clients.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the people that want to talk to their kid at dinner,
mm-hmm.
you know, at a meal, I would almost guarantee if you learn how to text, you're going to learn more about your kid's emotional state. Because they are very emotional with their friends.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start texting with them, they don't really comprehend that, oh, I'm talking to mom or dad, you know. Mm-hmm. And they reveal a lot of emotional stuff that they won't at the dinner table.
That's very interesting.
So
we're talking about also this business of just asking somebody, are you okay?
Yeah.
And let's say they say, no, I'm not okay. Then what do you do?
Let's talk. Tell me what's going on.
And just listen.
And listen. And don't give your interpretation of what they're going through. Don't say, oh, I know what you're talking about. You do not know what they're talking about.
Yeah, we have such a tendency verbally to want to fix everything. We're
right.
such great problem solvers. But that's probably not what they need right then.
It is not probably. It is not what they need.
Yeah.
Almost all people, well, a large percentage, and I'd say it's around 80 or 90% of the people have communicated in some way to people that they're close to that they're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't just come out and say, I'm suicidal, I'm ready to kill myself, though some of them have
right.
said that. And if somebody says that to you, it's really important, if you can't deal with it, is to get somebody involved that can
yeah.
and that will.
Yeah.
But that's one of the pieces that we really want to get out there is getting people aware of the differences. And one of the things I've got here is trust the signs. You know this person. Let's say you know this person. That's who we're talking about is people you know pretty well. And if you see them shifting and they're a little more depressed or they're talking negatively and they never talked negatively before and all that kind of thing, trust your gut and get ready to ask. Now, let me give a caveat here. This is not at lunch in a crowded restaurant and asking this question, because it's not a safe place for either one of you to have a conversation about this. Mm-hmm. The location is important, and privacy is ideal if you can get that. And also if you can get away from a phone or that kind of thing. But asking them the question and then just listening to them and reading what they're going through, and tell me more. Mm-hmm. And what about that? Mm-hmm. And what do you think you could do? And what are some people that you could talk to? Who do you trust? Things like that. And if it feels like they're suicidal, don't leave them alone.
Yeah.
Be with them and suggest that I'll go with you. We'll go to the hospital. You got a therapist? Don't know one? There's several therapists here in town. We'll give them a call.
Although, I would say, as a retired therapist, most people are not therapists. Professionals in the field are not that well trained when it comes to suicide. I mean, you're almost better with a crisis line.
Right. Well, and I've listed them, and we do have therapists in this county that are. To get a therapist license in Oregon, you don't have to have any suicidal training.
Right.
At all.
And that's true of the other places that I've been in, Canada, California. Yeah.
And they don't teach it in therapy school.
Exactly.
I don't know whether it's medical school or what. But there are some very, very skilled therapists that currently work with suicide clients.
So maybe the path might be to talk to the crisis line, get a referral from them.
I don't know whether they can do that or not, mm-hmm. but maybe they can. Maybe they can call somebody in and have the therapist call them. But if you call the crisis line and it's a crisis, it'll probably be the team, and the team knows how to deal with all of that.
Right.
So that would be an ideal situation.
Sounds really good. I have to take a little break and say that you're listening to KCIWLP. Curry Coast Community Radio, 100.7 FM in beautiful Brookings, Oregon. So I know we wanted to talk a little bit about some of the sort of legislative things that are going on, and the Healthy Teen Survey, I think it's called.
Right.
Some of these things, the council that's being formed. You want to bring us up to date on some of these developments?
Sure. Love to.
Love to.
I really want to spend a little time on the Healthy Teen Survey.
Okay.
This is something that has been done in Curry County for 20 years. It's been done in the state of Oregon. It happens at all high schools and middle schools that will participate in it. Some don't. But it asks a whole bunch of questions about health and drugs and alcohol and sexuality and all kinds of things, molestation, that kind of thing. ACEs are on it now, asking the kids about how many ACEs they have, which is an adverse childhood experience. Very important in our school system. But what has happened is that...
Could you say a little more about that? Like, what is the criteria of an ACEs?
Google ACEs at CDC. The CDC has 10 questions, and this is a system that's been around for a number of years. It's well-researched, and it's 10 things that happens to a child before 18, like physical abuse, sexual abuse, divorce of your parents, alcoholism of the family, etc. I went through that, and I got 6 of them, and I'm just lucky that I didn't go down a road of where I became an alcoholic or I became an abuser or any of that kind of stuff.
So if you score a certain amount, then you're probably at risk for PTSD
of
things.
It is so well researched that a certain combination of these 10 will bring will develop a certain disease in your body.
Oh, yeah.
And there are a number of those that have been identified. So if a kid's gone through this and this and this, we've got to help. But those are also a lot of the kids that are causing disruption.
Mm-hmm.
Or boys that can't sit still. Boys aren't born to sit still. That's not how boys learn. But that's a system that they've been enforced into in the last 10 to 15 years, and it isn't working, and they're not graduating from high school, and they're not going to college, and they're not getting skills training. Mm-hmm. And so it's a real problem. Well, these kids that are acting out, that is a cry for help.
Yeah.
And what we have, I know all of the, I've been told all of the teachers in our school district here in Brookings went through the ACES training.
How do you spell ACES?
A-C-E.
A-C-E. Like,
yeah,
okay.
And it's Advanced or Adverse Childhood Experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to have to really adjust our school learning instead of putting some kid into community bridges to actually work with them to get through to these ACEs and solve some of these problems so that they can become more adept at surviving instead of putting them there and sending them out of the system and say, go get a GED.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's not going to
exactly
help them at all, and that's going to put their problems in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have to deal with it in the judicial system and in the medical system and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, as a previous foster parent, I really, really identify with what you're saying. The kids that have so much potential, if they could just somehow work with some of these things, and yet the help really isn't there in many cases.
No, and that's why I'm really wanting us as individuals to learn the warning signs so that we can circumvent,
mm-hmm,
instead of sending somebody to an emergency room.
Yeah.
Work it before it gets there. Well, I want to tell you about the Healthy Teen Survey.
I was just going to say, please.
Okay. I've tracked this for lots of years, but what I've done is I've done the last 5 years. And this recent survey, one of the first questions is, did you ever feel so sad or hopeless that in the last 2 weeks, for a continuous 2 weeks, you didn't do some important things that you usually do? That is a question to determine depression.
Mm-hmm.
Depression went up from the previous survey, up 19% of the kids.
And
this is not up 19%.
1 year over another year,
yes,
like just the last 2 years.
It went up from 30.5% of all 11th graders to 53%.
Holy.
Of all 11th graders.
Wow.
Of the 8th graders, and it went up from 29 to 33%. That's almost 7%. The question of, in the last year, did you seriously consider suicide?
Mm-hmm.
The teens went, or the 8th graders went up to 15.7% of all 8th graders. 25.9% of all 11th graders. And here's the scary one. In, did you actually attempt suicide in the last 12 months? Self-identified, nobody knows who's saying it.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few that acknowledge that they cheat on these things,
right,
but they've got the algorithms at the research firm to kick most of those out, because they see some patterns.
Yeah.
You know, the algorithms. 6.9% of 8th graders and 9.1% of 11th graders said they attempted suicide.
That's nearly 1 in 10.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right. And that's somewhere around 4, I think, if I remember right, somewhere around 44 kids in our high school. And have we caught those kids?
Mm-hmm.
Have we circumvented it and gotten them the help they need? Hopefully, because I know the school counselor or the school psychologist up there is way overbooked.
Mm-hmm.
But I would bet kids are slipping through the cracks. And,
oh, yeah.
And we have really got to get on top of that. And this keeps going up, you know? It was 7.2% the year before.
It's so sad. You know? It's like we're losing our kids.
Yeah. And so anyway.
And those are stats for our county.
Yes.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
It's Curry County. So anyway, we've got to do something about it.
Well, the good news is there's a new council, mm-hmm. the Suicide Awareness Prevention Council.
Yep.
And that's just starting up, so hopefully something good comes out of that. Could you say a little bit more about what that is?
I would love to. Okay. I am so happy with our county commissioners. I have broached this subject several times over the years, and this time, well, let me tell you one more thing.
Okay.
On a statewide basis, mm-hmm. the CDC usually has 10 leading causes of death. But for instance, the cancer cause of death is all cancers put together. And so what they've done is they've broken out those cancers in separate categories and broken out heart conditions in separate categories. And so they've determined what are the 50 leading causes of death.
Oh, yeah.
In Oregon, from 15 to 54, those four categories, the leading
those cause, are ages?
Yeah.
Okay.
15 to 24, 25 to 34, 35 to 44, 45 to 54.
Uh-huh.
All four of those categories, the leading cause of death in Oregon is suicide.
Wow.
Not drugs, not cancers, not anything else but suicide. So we have got a big problem. We've had it for years. I think we ranked 13th in the nation when we're the 26th largest state. And we've just got a major problem. There are a lot of reasons that we can go through that.
And when you say 26th largest state, is that by geography or population?
By population.
Oh, okay. Just trying to figure that one out. It doesn't sound right, but I believe you.
It's called the Suicide Awareness and Prevention Council.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's made up of is 15 categories of primarily stakeholders in Curry County. It's 17 people, but we've got three lay positions that make it 17. Law enforcement officer, a first responder like EMT or fire, a medical doctor, nurse, hospital board member, or community care organization member, a social worker, therapist, counselor, or peer support trained in suicidality, a substance abuse recovery person, a youth educator, elder services, juvenile programming, veterans programming or services, a city mayor or administrator, a tribal community member, a faith-based community, a youth ambassador, the media, and three lay people. What one does is they go on the county website and look for the application for volunteer boards, commissions, and councils and print off the application form. And it doesn't have this council on it because the council has not actually officially started, but there's a box down at the bottom, and you click that box and put in suicide counsel there, and then answer the questions that are on here. There's two things that aren't on here that I ask for, is which one of these categories are you looking to fill? Mm-hmm. Where is your experience
right. The
best? And put that in the form so that the commissioners who will pick the people know what one that you're looking at. And the other one is I would like people to put in there what their lived experience is with suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not necessarily I attempted or seriously considered it. It could be losing somebody very close or in the family or that kind of thing.
Right.
And really tell a little bit about that and how that has impacted you and increased your desire to really see if we can solve this problem in Curry County.
So you're looking for people that feel moved by some of the things you're saying today or otherwise moved about suicide to sign up for these particular roles. There's 23 in there, total, something
no,
like
17
that? 17.
Total.
So your wish is that somebody listening might look that up and sign up.
Yes.
Or maybe several somebodies.
Several somebodies.
And what's our timeline about this group coming together?
The absolute deadline to apply is January 21.
Uh-huh.
I'm hoping people do it very soon or sooner than later so that we can really see what positions aren't filled and we can go out and really work those communities to see if we can't get somebody that is really interested.
Well, so your wish would be, even though it's Christmas and everybody's really busy, please go ahead and sign up now rather than waiting till the last minute, because it's going to make a big difference for the health of the council as a whole.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we want to get the best 17 people that are really interested. This is a major problem, and it's a problem that I put on the symposium on suicide like 4 or 5 years ago here in the county, with that desire to get people together. And from, and I had like 10 or 11 of the major stakeholders there, from the hospital and from the sheriff's office and the police and the all of these in the media. Scott Graves was there, and to talk about this issue, and hoping that we'd coalesce a council at that time. And that didn't happen, and now it has.
So is this council is a freestanding entity. It's not associated. It's associated with the county, is that right?
Right. It's a council of the county, an official council.
Okay. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
So they have a certain mandate from the council to do this and advise all these different groups and bring them together.
Right.
I need to take a little break and say you're listening to KCIW-LP, Curry Coast Community Radio, 100.7 FM in beautiful Brookings, Oregon. Beautiful, but troubled.
Troubled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're got a little bit of time left. Now, this council, is this something that's been legislated? There's a bill out there, too, isn't there?
Yeah. The council is, and there's an ORS or something that depicts, I think it's 19-21 or something like that, and it's part of the official governing of Curry County. And the Board of Commissioners are the ones that appoint the people to the council, and they oversee it. And there's a member from the council that will be a liaison to the group. So they're on top of this. We've got we're really looking at, well, the council actually determines what we're actually going to look at. But we are, as I see it, we really want to look at the different areas, these 15 stakeholder categories, because each one of them has a major impact on how they deal with suicide.
Yeah.
And in their efforts to come together and put this puzzle together to see what are we overlapping, what are we missing totally, and I know without a question that we're missing some major things. And that we've got evidence-based research that says how to deal with these things.
All right. So I had another question, though. There's something going through, I guess, the state legislature.
Right.
Also, at this point in time, that's mandating something happen in all the schools, is it?
Yeah.
I'm a little vague on the details. Can you fill us in?
Well, I've got the bill here.
Oh, how handy.
Yes. And it's Senate Bill 52.
Okay.
And it's been something that I've worked on with the Alliance on Suicide and several of the commissions, the Safe Schools, who actually chose the LGBT club here in Brookings for their bathroom signs that they put up several years ago. And I've worked with that council out of Portland for several years. And it's something that we've really been working on to get the school systems to develop programs.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that Brookings has been working on for like 4 years is a crisis council, a crisis prevention protocol. And things to do, the crisis team to set up, who's responsible to actually handle a crisis, that kind of thing. And this session, and it's going to take effect, this stuff has to be done by July 1 of 2020. It's called Addie's Act. And it's procedures relating to suicide prevention, intervention, and activities that reduce risk and promote healing after suicide, which is called postvention. It goes, the school's officials responsible for policy and responding to reports of suicide, and that's the crisis team, a procedure of which people are to handle complaints if somebody does not do what they're supposed to do. And all of this really has to be set in laws and school policies to make it happen at all. We can, and then address high-risk groups like the disabled, like the homeless, like the trans, the LGBT groups, all of those are the ones that really have a much higher rate of suicide, mainly from bullying and that kind of thing. And bullying is a major impact here too. Is we got to pay attention to bullying, because a very high rate of our kids in Curry County, of our 11th graders, 35% were harassed in the last 30 days, and of the 8th graders, 30%.
So it's like very a third high. Of the kids
yeah.
feel that they've been bullied.
Yeah, and 20% of the 11th graders have been cyberbullied, and that is an evil. That is really tearing kids up. But these are going to have to be set, and set in trainings, have training set up, have designating on who does what and what to do. And this has been a long time coming. In every 7th through 12th grader has got to be taught CPR in our schools, every single one. It's the law. And yet for years, we've been trying to get some training on suicidality. And if we trained our teachers and we trained our students on what to look for, they're going to see it. Right now, very few, most of the kids that are sent to the therapist come from being recommended by their friends, not from teachers and administrators. The kids that come from administrators and teachers are usually the kids that are causing problems, so they send them to the therapist's office. If they get aware of the suicide warning signs, they will see these kids every day, because they see these kids long more than their parents do.
Yeah.
And being aware, and the other real tricky thing is they need to know what to do. And that's why a lot of them that do see something don't do anything about it, because they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And so we've got to train them to do that too.
Well, again, this might be a good time to reiterate, what do you do if you have a suspicion that someone you care about or just someone you know is in trouble?
Some of the things, when you notice a change in a friend, no matter how small, here's some of the things that be looking for. You know, it's like, what are they saying? Do they seem confused and irrational, moody, unable? And these are new things that they aren't, this isn't a pattern of theirs. Unable to switch off, concerned about the future, concerned they're a burden, lonely and lacking self-esteem, concerned they're trapped or in pain. What are they doing? Are they experiencing mood swings, becoming withdrawn, changing their online behavior, losing interest in what they used to love, unable to concentrate, less interested in their appearance and personal hygiene? This is a big one.
Yeah.
Being reckless, behaving recklessly, and changing their sleep patterns. And what's going on in their life? Are they experiencing relationship issues, major health issues, work pressure or constant stress, financial difficulty, loss of someone or something they care about? And one of the things that I want people to really be aware of for men, because 80% of suicide attempts are women. 80% of successful suicides are men, because we don't fail. And we are taught not to be a victim, not to complain, tough it up, man up, big boys don't cry, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So we cannot ask for help.
Yeah.
And the big thing is, if you've got a friend that's going through a divorce, talk to him and say, anytime you want to talk, let's talk. And I encourage women and men to do this, but particularly men, because men can relate on how it is to be in this box where I can't admit failure and I can't admit problems.
Or even ask for help.
Or ask for help. And women can be very, very sympathetic and very helpful in that regard, but another man most likely can relate directly to what's going on because he's been there.
Yeah.
And so if you see that, that's an immediate sign. Over half of the men that kill themselves is because of a relationship.
Yeah, I could imagine that. I mean, even though, how do I want to put this? A lot of men are self-sufficient. There's a lot of men that aren't, and they really depend on a woman when they've been in a relationship for a long time for creature comforts, for creating a home and a social life and all of that. And if that leaves, I mean, they're just sort of left high and dry.
Well, the big thing is that when a couple gets married, she's got all her friends, and they've talked about all kinds of things for years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
He's got her.
Mm-hmm.
They get a divorce or they're having trouble in a relationship, she's got all her friends to go to.
Mm-hmm.
He's got drinking buddies or buddies he's played sports with, but most likely he hasn't gotten vulnerable.
Yeah,
And then he's in a place also of shame,
mm-hmm.
because I'm messing up here with this woman. I'm a failure.
Yeah.
And how can I go to my friends? And all of a sudden, I withdraw, I back away. It even gets more intense for me because now I've got lawyer bills and all that, and I've got to fight this, and I got to worry about the kids and blah, 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 blah. And it really can get insurmountable.
Yeah, I could really see that. Getting back to the kids, because you said so many great things a little bit ago about what to look for and all. I think another big stressor on kids today is the whole violence in the school thing.
Yes.
I hear stories about that being one of the number one things on their minds, that, you know, they're going to have to cope with an active shooter situation at some point.
They just had a lockdown.
Here?
Up at the high school.
No, I didn't know that.
It was a practice.
Mm.
But what I've read about lockdowns is it is increasing the paranoia of the kids.
Of course.
Because what it's doing
is bringing this
situation that happens way off. We did have one in Oregon,
mm-hmm.
you know, but that's a couple hundred miles away.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you're imagining it's happening in Brookings.
Yeah.
And so I'm going through this active shooter situation, and it's just amping up way beyond where I was at when I read about the situation up at the college and when I saw the aftermath. And I've got a couple of statistics here on violence in the Curry County schools.
Yeah.
5.2% of juniors and 12.1% of eighth graders, and these are ninth graders and seniors this year, missed at least one day of school because they didn't feel safe. 7.4 of 11th and 14% of eighth graders was in a physical fight on school property.
Wow.
6.4% of 11th and 9.7% of 12th graders was threatened with a weapon on school property. This is Curry County.
I'm flabbergasted, really. I wouldn't think that we had weapons on campus, but we do, apparently.
Yeah, we do. And in my view, we've got virtually every high school kid carrying a weapon to school.
Say that again. You think that?
I think that almost every high school student and many middle school students, unless policies changed, are carrying a weapon on school property.
Why would so many be doing that?
Because we allow it.
Oh.
And this is not a, well, it's sort of a trick question, but it's a cell phone. And it's allowing, but don't blow it off.
Okay.
Because what we are seeing in valid research is it is dumbing down our kids. It is actually committing crimes because under school policy, they have to now, and under this, they have to now acknowledge what is happening off school grounds as it comes to cyberbullying because it impacts the kids in the classroom and in the school. And we, you know, in the old days, parents didn't have any trouble getting a hold of their kids. They talked to the office. Kids didn't have any trouble talking to their parents. They talked to the office. Now they're figuring out what the kid wants for lunch and what the kid wants for dinner, and they communicate back and forth during the school system. And I've got to have my cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't used to.
No.
We don't need to now. And there's all kinds of research that shows how it is lowering our kids' IQ. It's lowering our ability to think. And I've got a whole book at home. And it just, you go through this and say, I wouldn't have a cell phone in 50 miles of a school.
You know. Well, you know, I think one of the things that is different now today is that because of cell phones and all the media we have going on at our fingertips, that if something embarrassing happens to you in a class, mm-hmm. everybody in the school is going to know it
right.
before the next break.
Yep.
It's just instant.
Right.
So you have no time to recover from or, you know, work out a strategy or anything mm-hmm. about whatever the embarrassing thing is. And, you know, kids aren't necessarily kind to each other at the best of times. So anyway, don't mean to be prejudiced. But, I mean, there is a lot of bullying, and bullying seems to be on the rise. And maybe you can speak a little bit to bullying in general here before we run out of time, because it's so important.
Well, every category for 11th graders except perceived LGBT, and I think that's because of the club up there really making it more normal to know who an LGBT kid is and how they're not much different than us.
Yeah.
And unwanted sexual comments. Those were the only two that were down. Everything else was up. And cyberbullying was almost double what it is in the state. Harassment for other reasons is more than double, and your group of friends is more than double the average Oregon school. And the eighth graders were up in everything but perceived LGBT and other ways of harassment. But all the other ones, like race, ethnicity, unwanted or weight, clothes, your group of friends, etc., were all up.
So
from last year, and continuing to go up for the last 5 years.
And is there anything being done about that at the level of the school or any other way?
Well, let me say mm-hmm. that I believe that there's going to be some change happening.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have left that I believe were major problems in seeing these numbers go in the wrong way. I have filed issues about it, and I believe that there is a chance, and it's going to take a change in the culture.
Uh-huh.
Because we've had a long-standing culture of accepting harassment. And even a few years ago, when the JV and the girls' basketball team, many of them had a major complaint, actually the school went and fought against them. And the community fought against them and made it even more strenuous to complain about being harassed and one of the girls being sexually harassed.
Okay.
And it went against the girls. And so starting back there about 5 years ago or so, kids shut down. They saw that it even gets worse when they complain. And I've got probably 8 cases of families that have left, people I know that have left this community, and all but one of them went out of state, out of the state of Oregon, because it didn't feel safe to have their kids educated in not only this county, but this state.
Wow, so that's pretty impressive. And there's not really much out there. I mean, good news is that the folks that were maybe allowing all that to happen are no longer there. That's good. But is there any, like, outreach that's going on and any programming about bullying in the curricula? Anything being done about it as a policy?
I believe that we've got a temporary superintendent,
mm-hmm.
and he's there to run the system until we get a permanent at the start of the next school year. And we've got a new high school principal and an assistant principal. And I truly believe that they are going to take the steps to turn things around.
I've certainly heard some good things about them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am very impressed. The problem was amplified in the last year. Rotary gave a lot of money to the high school system to do an ongoing bullying program last year.
Uh-huh.
And they did, I believe, just one assembly and then dropped it. And so here's all this prepared, and what we know about bullying and what works is a continuing program. Every week there's something going on.
Uh-huh.
And so I hope they are going to finish off that, and I believe that they are going to take on some things. And what the big challenge for them is to change the culture of not only the students, but the staff and administrators and teachers to really see bullying as a major problem and see what happens to the kids who are bullied. And 75% of school shootings are because of bullying.
That's an important statistic.
Yeah. Most of the kids, like 1 out of 10 schools, leave school mm-hmm. because of bullying. There's so many statistics in that way. If we get in touch with that and turn it around, I think that'll make the whole system here work, and our kids will really get an education.
And on that happy thought, we're going to have to stop for now, which is too bad because we could go on and on. It'd be lovely to talk about this some more. I mean, lovely maybe not the right word, but in any case, Gordon, thank you so much for coming. This has been Gordon Clay with us, advocate for suicide prevention. And I'd like to thank also Pi White, our co-producer and technical support. This has been Lee Tooley for Reality Check on KCIW. Thank you for listening.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.